Hey everybody, welcome to Vine Abiders with me, Chris White. This is live streamed on YouTube and Facebook every other Wednesday night. You can also check out the audio podcasts on Apple or Spotify. Just search for Vine Abiders there or on Substack. Before we get started, I wanted to mention a giving opportunity for an orphanage in Kenya through my website, chriswhiteministries.com, or go to their website, joyfulheartshome.com, which is a website that Chris White Ministries maintains. You can donate there for this orphanage. It comes to us, Chris White Ministries, but then we distribute it to the orphanage. I personally don't take donations for my lifestyle or have independent income for that, and I hope to not require income through ministry ever again. That's the goal. But my ministry does support this organization, and it's something we've really taken to heart. So when I went to Africa in 2012, I met with this pastor, and recently we got together again because this orphanage that he runs was about to basically close down. COVID had hit the area very hard. And so we committed to making sure at least that the kids had the basic necessities every month. So food and basic stuff, medicine and stuff. But we've recently started to, try to expand that. So we recently bought some land for, them to have a chicken farm so they could have chickens and eggs and even make some extra money to support themselves. And we're even expanding beyond that, hoping to get some more land. That's sort of something that's going on right now to expand the ministry for lots of different reasons. But really, it's an exciting journey to go on. If you don't have a good place to give right now, this is a place where you can, check out the Substack, check out their website, and we keep it updated every time something new happens. So one of the recent posts was, we got these plastic chairs because they were having to sit on the ground during school and share chairs, mosquito nets, and all kinds of stuff that they just need, and you can follow the journey. So it's a great way to give to a cause that is definitely worthy of supporting, but also to kind of see the journey and kind of watch how it's going. So you can go to the website, joyfulheartshome.com. You can also check out their Substack, which should be live by the time that this episode airs. And it's something I think I'm going to continue to market as something that you guys can donate to and join in this journey of helping this orphanage in Kenya. I will also link the website in the description or show notes of wherever you're listening to this podcast. Okay, so we have just transitioned from Matthew 5 to Matthew 6, another section of the Sermon on the Mount. This is where Jesus transitions a little bit. He's no longer using the format that he was doing, where you have heard it said in the Old Testament basically this, but I say to you that. That's what we've been hitting mostly through Vine Abiders so far. But now he's transitioned to another form of teaching. And so I'm going to read Matthew 6, 1 through 6, and that's what we're going to cover today. Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. When you pray, you are not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners, so that they may be seen by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, go into an inner room, close the door, pray to the Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees what is done to you in secret will reward you. The way I'm going to approach this passage is first talking about the two things that he's saying to not do to be seen by men. He mentions giving and praying here. So we'll talk about those, the importance of doing your good deeds in secret and why that might be, etc. And then the second part, which I think is sort of the lead here, which is the biblical concept of reward. I mean, he mentions reward so many times in this chapter, and it's amazing to think that, okay, giving and praying, a reward is definitely, like, that's the default, is a reward for doing those things unless you're doing it improperly. And I want to just unpack a little about that, because if you're like me, I've sort of, the idea of getting a reward, whether they be earthly or heavenly or both, for any of those things, I tend to downplay, perhaps in an overcorrection from sort of the modern name it and claim it, prosperity gospel. and maybe I'm overcorrecting a little bit and not even thinking that there is such a thing as rewards for these things, when clearly there is, and we'll talk about that as well. I also want to mention briefly the sort of elephant in the room here that I just got done mentioning, how our ministry supports this orphanage in Africa. And then I read a verse that says you should not sound your trumpet about your giving to be seen by men. And I don't know what the exact answer to that is. I would say that in the Bible, there's certainly Paul is praising a certain church for giving to him when nobody did. And there is a sort of public acknowledgement of ministry giving. But I would say certainly the default is to do your giving in secret. I do think that there is a, for example, the Samaritan's Purse, when they do the shoebox giving to, you know, when they have those videos saying, hey, look at these kids opening this thing, you know, we did this. Is that sounding the trumpet to be seen by men? Or is that what's necessary to be able to, for lack of a better word, advertise a ministry opportunity, in which you have to sort of say what we're going to do and what we are doing? And so it is something I think about. And it's very possible that, you know, I may have lost my reward for doing it this way. But if that's the case, then I've certainly got other opportunities to give in secret in the future. And, you know, now you have an opportunity to give in secret with it as well. So I think it's a net positive, even if it is as rigorous as that, and that all previous giving is now loss of reward. So, and it's certainly not my heart. I think you could probably see that I wouldn't do that to be seen by men. That's not a desire of mine. So this teaching of Jesus in our passage about not doing your righteousness before men to be seen by them, otherwise you lose your reward for that righteousness, is also broadened beyond giving and prayer to include fasting a little bit later in Matthew 6, 16 through 18. And then in Matthew 23 and John 12, Jesus talks about this mostly with regard to the people seeking praise from men, not necessarily about giving prayer or fasting, but that heart of seeking praise from men from your righteousness. So I've included these passages here because I think this is all part of a broader teaching that we're going to try to understand in this section. What is Jesus trying to get at here? What is the specific attitude or sin that he's trying to highlight that we need to incorporate into our own lives? Let's talk about this first commandment, to give to the poor in secret. He says, but when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret. What's interesting as I go through the Sermon on the Mount is that a lot of the commandments that Jesus gives can be seen in the Old Testament. The heart that he is conveying is usually seen explicitly somewhere in the Old Testament as well, but there's been a few occasions where it is a new teaching. You can't find an analog in the Old Testament. And I think that is the case here as well. I can't find anything in my admittedly sort of cursory search, but, you know, it was a pretty thorough search to look for the idea of giving in secret in the Old Testament. Certainly, the Old Testament talks about giving to the poor, the importance of that. It even talks about the heart of it. But the idea of giving in secret is not explicitly taught, as far as I can tell, in the Old Testament. So this would have been something new that people heard. I have here some quotes from the early church fathers, which show that they believed that this teaching of Jesus about secret giving was a commandment for them. They practiced this. We see like Tertullian saying, we make no show in this. The work is not proclaimed with trumpets. We see this in other quotes from the early church fathers that I have listed here. So they recognized, as they did with most of Jesus's teachings on the Sermon on the Mount, that this was something that they were to do, to follow as Christians. So one of the things I was thinking about a lot when reading these passages about not doing your righteousness to be seen by men is, what sin is Jesus warning against in these passages, like in Matthew 6? To be seen by men, that is somewhat like hypocrisy, which he often mentions in context of warning about this. And it's somewhat like pride, but I don't think it's either. I think it's a new sin. I think it's an old sin, but I think it's one that we often don't even know the name of and certainly aren't really on the lookout for, very much. And I want to talk about what that is. But first, I want to sort of expand on what I mean by it's not quite hypocrisy, but it's also often mentioned in the same breath. There's a passage in Matthew 23 that I think talks about this with regard to the scribes and Pharisees. And there's another place that's somewhat like this as well, where it mentions a couple things that they do that are hypocritical. So when I think of hypocritical, I mean, well, I think this is a good example. They tie up heavy burdens and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are unwilling to move them so much as a finger. In another place, he talks about how they're essentially robbing from widows while, you know, pretending to be righteous. That would be a pretty good example of hypocrisy. But I think you can be hypocritical, that is really not meaning what you're doing in any real way. That's not the same thing as, I think, loving the place of honor. So Woody goes on to talk about this section, which is in the same section, but they do all their deeds to be noticed by men, for they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments. They love the place of honor at banquets and the chief seats in the synagogues and respectful greetings in the marketplaces and being called rabbi by men. So that's not hypocritical necessarily, to love those things, to be seen by men. That's not the same sin as hypocrisy. It could be. It could be, as it was with the scribes and Pharisees, often associated with it, but it wasn't that. And I would say it's also not pride necessarily, although it is certainly akin to pride. And I think that he sums up in this section in Matthew 23 by saying, whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. So that is certainly, exalting yourself is very much a pride, you know, that might as well be the very picture of pride, to exalt yourself. But I would say that the desire to exalt yourself, is that the same thing as loving to be seen by men as doing something? I don't think it is. I think that that is something a little bit different. It could be maybe the opposite of humble is probably pride, but the love of praise from men is a slightly different situation. I guess I'm sort of splitting hairs here, but the punchline here is that there is a name that's distinct for this sin, which is called vainglory. Vainglory is a form of pride marked by the desire for recognition, admiration, or praise. It reflects a longing to be noticed or honored for one's actions, often at the expense of humility and sincerity. In Scripture, vainglory is treated as a sin because it shifts the focus from God to self. Although everyone is susceptible and in danger of committing the sin of vainglory, the cultures that prize good works are especially vulnerable and need to be on the lookout for it. So as we see that the Pharisees were guilty of vainglory, they certainly lived in a culture that praised good works. That was a part of that culture at the time. To do what God had commanded was considered a good thing. You were looked upon as a good, you know, citizen if you were doing the things that God said to do, which is, you know, a pretty unique situation. But we have that same culture in Christianity today, and not just in, you know, false Christianity or when it's being done wrong, but also when it's being done right. The subculture of our local church or whatever, they praise good works. It's just considered a good thing, and for good reason. I mean, Jesus commands to do good works. He says, even in this section, when you give to the poor, when you pray, later on, when you fast, these are things that he is expecting more or less for Christians to do. So when we do them, it is almost a thing that we should do, but to do it in secret to avoid the sin of vainglory, which religious cultures are susceptible to. It's not just religious people, though, that are guilty of this or susceptible to it, as I mentioned. Modern secular culture has its own version of this, often called virtue signaling. This is especially prevalent in some political groups that really highlight the idea of helping the downtrodden or minority. For them, that's a huge identity issue. And so their culture very much rewards the person who does good deeds in that context. And so vainglory is a massive problem for everybody, not just religious people. But it is something that we need to be aware of. Moving on to what is said here about prayer And this has the same construction as what he said about giving to the poor. He talks about the Pharisees first and saying that they love to stand and pray in the synagogues so that they may be seen by men. So the vainglory aspect of it. And then his solution is to go and pray into your inner room, close the door and pray to your Father who is in secret. And it also has the idea of the rewards here, just like we saw with giving to the poor. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So the same construction, it's the same teaching here, as far as I can tell, about vainglory. It's certainly not the only teaching he's going to have about prayer. Right after this, he goes into teaching about the Lord's Prayer and some more about prayer. This is another instance where, at least in a cursory search, I did not find any Old Testament parallel to Matthew 6, verse 6, about praying in secret. So there's nothing that I can see in the Old Testament that talks about praying in secret as a virtuous thing that you should do. Certainly no commands from the Torah or prophets saying to do this. So it kind of is at least a new explicit teaching. And, you know, you can see in the Old Testament people praying quietly and by themselves and things like that, but it's not highlighted in this way. Again, I think this is a new commandment. Although I would say that the sin of vainglory certainly would have been recognized as something that was not virtuous, even if it wasn't specifically detailed here. One interesting thing about the prayer aspect of this, as contrasted to the giving aspect, is that when you do a search in the New Testament for people praying in public or in private, you can see examples of both. So I would say that at least with prayer, you can say that, you know, this isn't meant to restrict a Christian from praying corporately, because as we'll see, Jesus seemed to pray both privately and corporately, as well as the New Testament church prayed corporately often. So it's not restricting that or saying that that's bad. I think it's mostly to say, you know, to avoid the sin of praying on the street corners to seem virtuous before men, pray alone. That's the main chief focus here, not to restrict corporate prayer. But when you try that with giving, to look for examples of corporate giving or giving in public being something that, you know, is kind of both, you don't really see that. In a brief search, you can find examples of, you know, collections being taken at a church and Paul asking for collections to be set aside and people, you know, selling their houses and stuff and putting it in a communal situation. But each one of those you could interpret in that being done in secret. You know, Ananias and Sapphira, even when they sold their house and they had to be asked, did you sell it for such and such amount? You know, I think that even in that case, all that stuff could have been done in secret. Yes, people probably knew that everybody sold their house or didn't sell their house, but, and the same thing with taking up an offering. Yes, okay, everybody take an offering, but in the same way we do in our modern churches, you know, you don't have to sound a trumpet with that. You've got envelopes. People know that you came up there and gave, but they don't know how much you gave or these kinds of things. So I think that corporate giving is, I mean, how else are you going to do it? You're there in church. You're going to take up the offering at that time. You can't not know that a person gave money and this person didn't give money, but how much, and putting it on a big board, you don't see that. However, I would say with regard to prayer, we do know that Jesus prays alone. He seeks a solitary place to pray. He habitually seems to withdraw to pray. And, you know, alone on a mountain, Jesus praying alone, lots of different references I have here. Although I would say that he does pray publicly, at least in a few occasions. You could say that with Lazarus at the tomb, he's praying in front of people there. The high priestly prayer in John 17 seems to be spoken in front of his disciples. If you read that in context, it could be that he, you know, was meaning it to be private, but was overheard, but that doesn't seem to be the context in John 17. Matthew 14:19, he's blessing the food before thousands. Luke 9:16, public thanksgiving before feeding the 5,000. The early church, Acts 4:24-31, they lifted their voices together in united prayer. So that's a very explicit moment where there's people together praying in a public corporate prayer. And we could probably add a few more to that. Acts 6, verse 6, public prayer at the appointment of the seven, many gathered together praying in a house. But I don't even like that one that much, because they could be gathered together praying in a house, but it might not be corporate. It could be individual, but I'm splitting hairs. I think that it's pretty obvious that corporate prayer is okay. And it's not, Jesus isn't saying in Matthew 6, only do private prayer. He's just trying to give you a formula for how to avoid the sin of vainglory as typified by the Pharisees on the street corners. That being said, clearly the emphasis is on private prayer. That's what you should do most of the time. And I would say corporate prayer, while okay some of the time, is more susceptible to vainglory. I mean, that's just the facts. I mean, you've probably been in corporate prayer where you've noticed that either yourself or others may be praying in such a way to, you know, be seen by men, even if they don't really want to. It makes you susceptible to that sin when doing it. So you need to be extra careful with corporate prayer, as clearly the emphasis is on private prayer. That's the vast majority of prayer that you can see in the New Testament. Let's move on to what I think is sort of the lead story here, which is the mention of rewards, the way that they're being mentioned here. So Jesus offers this idea about not receiving a reward as the reason not to give or pray in a vainglorious way, because otherwise you have no reward, which obviously strongly implies that rewards are the default for praying and giving to the poor. What does he mean by that? And I think that to internalize that Jesus sees praying and giving to the poor as default, he wants to reward you, that there are rewards in those things. What is the nature of those rewards? Are they on this earth? Are they heavenly? Are they both? To understand that would really help you in these Christian disciplines. And they're called Christian disciplines, prayer, fasting, giving, because they are not the default. You know, just like exercise, if you would not exercise if you didn't have to. And so you have to put forth effort to pray, give to the poor, fast. They need to be conscious decisions. And so he's saying that there is a reward for doing those things. So that's why you should put forth the effort, because of the reward. So let's look a little about what is this reward he's talking about. The Greek word used here is mesos. Probably not pronouncing that right, but it means dues paid for work, wages, your pay. And I think that's a really interesting way to think of rewards, that a contractual obligation to receive them unless other criteria isn't met, which is what Jesus seems to be saying here. You know, you want to receive your reward for your giving to your poor or praying, you want, but you won't receive it if you do it in the wrong way, which seems to be his argument for why you shouldn't do it in a way seeking praise from men, is because otherwise you wouldn't receive your reward, as if the rewards were the default, which I think is a really interesting situation. Rewards are used here in this passage in both a positive and negative way. So the Pharisees who do pray or give to the poor in a wrong way, he says they have received their reward in full, which I take to mean that they have received the praise from men for which they were seeking. And so they're already paid. You guys are good. You guys, everybody's getting paid here. You got what you wanted, but you who are not doing it that way also can get what your wages. And I think that this is interesting because rewards are real. That is the reason for giving, fasting, and praying in secret, in humility, truth, and without vainglory. Maybe not the whole reason, but a bonus you could think of it as. I think Hebrews 11:6 is a really important verse for this. It says, "And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him." You must believe that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. God wants us to believe. In fact, we must believe that he rewards those who seek him. And we can see a little bit of that in our passage, where the way that Jesus is talking about the rewards for giving to the poor and for praying and for fasting are like the default. Like, you don't want to lose your reward that you're obviously going to get, your wage, your pay for this discipline. You don't want to lose that by doing it improperly. And so to believe that God is a rewarder is a crucial Christian thing to do. And if you're like me, I kind of, you know, probably because of the name it and claim it world and the prosperity gospel, I've shied away from that. I would say that I'm mostly talking about heavenly rewards. That's the way that this is talking mostly about. It says both in the Old and New Testament, it's quoting from Isaiah in the book of Revelation when he says that when Jesus returns, his reward will be with him. So I think that's when the rewards happen. I think you can make that case very clearly, that we're storing up treasures for ourselves in heaven when we do good deeds. I mean, that's something that we could just line by line. We're going to go through some of those later. Although I would say that there is hints that it's also blessings here on the earth as well. And I could quote the name it and claim it verses, but I'm not going to do that necessarily, at least with giving, because I want to stay on solid ground with that and say there's real tangible things in heaven that will accrue to our account if we bear good fruit with regard to good deeds. And I think part of our problem as seeing that as motivation for anything is because it doesn't seem real or all that useful or worth it to be having more or less things in heaven. I mean, we're already in heaven. How could it be any better than that? And the answer, I guess, is I don't know. But like so many things, not knowing is kind of a part of our problem here on earth, is not knowing the exact nature of hell, for example, and how actually terrible it is. That knowing would immediately change our attitude here on earth. If we could really just for a moment see the kind of torture happening in hell to people, we'd be like, at all costs, I cannot endure that. All you would need is a brief glimpse of that to be like, okay, that's absolute, whatever I've got to do. And I think it's also probably true on the heaven side and the good work side. It's making these promises about these treasures in heaven as if you would really want to do that. But because we can't see it, we just are kind of like, look, I'm just trying to make it to heaven. I'm not going to, you know, the rewards would be bonus points. What I want to do now is read a bunch of passages from the Old and New Testaments about rewards specifically related to giving and prayer, which are the two things that we're studying in our passage today. And so let's start off with giving. Proverbs 19:17, one who is gracious to a poor person lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deed. Proverbs 22:9, one who is generous will be blessed because he gives some of his food to the poor. Proverbs 28:27, one who gives to the poor will never lack, but one who shuts his eyes will have many curses. Matthew 6:19-21, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 19:21, Jesus said to him, if you want to be complete, go and sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. Luke 12:33, sell your possessions and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near, nor doth a moth destroy. 2 Corinthians 9:6-8, now I say this, the one who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and the one who sows generously will also reap generously. Each one must do just as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace overflow to you, so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have abundance for every good deed. Philippians 4:17-19, not that I seek a gift itself, but I seek the profit which increases to your account. I have received everything in full and have abundance, and my God will supply all your needs according to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus. Hebrews 6:10, for God is not unjust so as to forget your work and love which you have shown towards his name in having served and in still serving the saints. 1 Timothy 6:17-19, instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. And then we have prayer, and this is a much bigger and broader topic, and we'll hit this a lot more probably next time, but I wanted to mention a few of these as well. Matthew 7:7-8, Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. Matthew 21:22, and whatever you ask in prayer, believing, you will receive. Mark 11:24, therefore I say to you, all things for which you pray and ask, believe that you have received them, and they will be yours. John 14:13-14, whatever you ask in my name, this I will do. If you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. John 15:7, if you remain in me, and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. John 16:23-24, if you ask the Father for anything in my name, he will give it to you. Ask and you will receive, so that your joy may be made full. James 1:5, but if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. James 5:16, the effective prayer of a righteous person can accomplish much. 1 John 3:21-22, whatever we ask, we receive from him because we keep his commandments and do the things that are pleasing in his sight. 1 John 5:14-15, if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. We know that we have the request which we have asked from him. I know it's hard to hear a bunch of different verses like that and to not glaze over, but I think that it's really important to realize like how strong of an argument this is, both on the giving side and the prayer side. The promises that we have about both of these things are immense. And this was just I could find more, many more in scripture about this. And I think that's what it comes back to. You must believe that he is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. And you can start to see, oh, wow, that is a serious thing that I must do. I must believe that he is a rewarder. And it has to do with this faith concept. You know, you've seen that in the prayer thing, ask, believing that you've received them, etc. And that's really important. Something I certainly need to learn a lot about. And I want to ask you the question, which is a question that I've been asking myself this week. You know, am I praying as if God will reward me? And if I started praying that way, would it look different? Would I pray more? Part of the reason I think I pray not as much as I should is because I doubt or don't believe in some sense that he will answer prayers. But if I did believe that, I would certainly pray more. I would pray more for individuals. I would, you know, pray more times a day. I would do lots of different things. The same thing with giving. And not just giving, but all the different good works that you can do. And things like fasting and so on and so forth. So I don't know. I think that especially with regard to prayer, which we're going to look at more next time, and which I certainly need more help in, I would love to start changing my mind to believe that God is a rewarder of those that diligently seek him, and that he wants us to be given the rewards. And I think that with prayer, at least, you could say that that must be, in some sense, earthly rewards. I mean, I think you could make the case to a certain degree with giving as well, but certainly prayer is usually things that you want to happen here in this life. That's what you're praying for. You're often praying for things to happen or change in this life. We see that in the New Testament, certainly. That's what people were praying for. Peter to get broken out of prison, and that happened, you know? So that's what I guess I'm trying to say. With regard to prayer, things can change. The prayer of a righteous man availeth much. If you're living the life and you're not, you know, grieving the Holy Spirit and you're doing what he says, you have this power that you should be aware of and that he wants you to know that you have. I'm rambling here, so I guess I'll kind of call it quits for today. I do want to remind you about the joyfulheartshome.com website, the orphanage that Chris White Ministries supports. I promise I didn't mean to put the first mentioning of giving in the show about giving. It just happened to coincide where the website was ready and I'm ready to announce it. Again, I don't take any personal money for my lifestyle or anything else from the donations. They go almost exclusively to the orphanage, although a certain amount is set aside for fundraising. So it is a way to support this show in the sense that this show is on shortwave radio in Europe. It's on AM and FM stations in which we pay for. So we pay to be on the air. And so although I don't require donations to continue that radio ministry, it is a way to also support this show in that the show gets out to more people, more radio stations, et cetera, through those donations and other fundraising activities that go to support the orphanage. So joyfulheartshome.com. You can also check the links in the show notes for more on that. Thank you for listening to Vine Abiders. We're here live on Facebook and YouTube every other Wednesday night. Also check us out on the various platforms, vineabiders.com.